live on a bunch of ones and zeros. You tech geeks know what I'm talking about. It's the Mike Novak Show, the country's best gardening, environment, and green living program, brought to you each week on your own personal device. Batteries not included. All right, everybody sing.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. And true currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the man.
And I have a couple of people on the line this morning who I assume are singing along. Are you guys singing along with this?
Yeah.
As a matter of fact.
We love that song.
Good planets are hard to find.
That's right.
Yeah, they are. And they are my 5 minutes with segment on today's show. And they are the Seed Keeper Gals. Hey there, Seed Keeper Gals.
Hey.
Hi, Mike.
Hi. It's Carol and Carrie. And no, you know, I'm not making that up. You know, that's that. Folks have to get really confused when they're dealing with you. Come on, Carol and Carrie, really?
We planned that.
Yeah, we're twin daughters of a different mother. Yes.
I guess so. And, you know, the best, we're never going to approximate the conversation that we just had before we started recording.
No.
Because we covered everything. We, in fact, you did your warm up. I should mention before we get started here that if you want more information about the Seed Keeper Company, and Carol and Carrie are the proprietors of the Seed Keeper Company, you can go to seedkeepercompany.com. Give me your Twitter and your Facebook handles too.
All right, you can find us on Twitter at Seed Keeper Co. We're pretty active there. Come on over. We love to chat and we share everything. And you can find us on Facebook at The Seed Keeper Company.
And I'll make sure that all of that's on my website, MikeNovak.net. If you want to know everything about seeds, and we'll get to that in just a second. But I want to let folks know what's going on today's show. My 5 minutes are with the Seed Keeper Gals, Carol and Carrie, or Carrie and Carol, depending on how you like the order of things. But before, well, actually, after we get to you, I'm going to be talking to Nancy Clem in a very interesting conversation. Nancy is, it's really hard to describe her. She's a horticulturist. She's an environmentalist. She's a teacher. She's a landscaper, a systems designer. She calls herself a steward of the earth. And she has put together this plan to help people compost their food scraps and other things in an urban setting mostly to create a good soil. We need good soil. We don't have enough of it. So that is her plan. She's got this Indiegogo called Feed Your Soil, The Ground Rules. And I like the idea of that. And we'll talk about that with Nancy Clem later on. But first, it's the Seed Keeper Gals.
We are here.
What was your warm-up? You said you did a warm-up. You do vocal warm-ups before you do your interviews?
Do you really want us to do that? We sound like nuts. I mean, like we're a little crazy. We just, you know, we do... What do we do?
Well, I don't know. We
la, 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 la.
Yeah,
that's
me,
it. That's a small preview.
That's it.
Thank God you can't see us because there are movements with it. You know.
The question is, are you wearing your black boots?
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I guess I'll have to put a picture of those up on my website at as well, MikeNovak.net. MikeNovak.net. Folks will know what I'm talking about. They're not as sexy as you think, but
they're garden boots.
They're garden boots, exactly, because that's what the Seed Keeper Company is all about. For folks who haven't heard your story, give me your elevator speech about the Seed Keeper Company.
Well, Carrie and I have been best friends for decades and fortunate enough to live just a couple houses away from each other. So about 7 or 8 years ago, we started our gardens from seed to save some money and, you know, try some different varieties. And then the next year we did the same and realized we had so many seeds left over that there was no practical way to store them. And so we came up with our seed keepers. And they hold tons of seeds, and it's a whole kit to help you be successful in the garden. And that's how we came to be.
And now we're seedaholics.
Yep.
I mean, once you get bit by that and you realize how easy it is to do, you want to grow everything.
And our seed keepers hold hundreds of seed packs. So, mm-hmm. you know, there's no limit.
Well, okay, there's your first task. Explain to somebody who would love to grow something and they can't afford to buy the plants, but the seed starting, they say, oh, I'm going to kill it. It's too hard. I'm not organized enough. What do you tell them?
Well, we tell them to give it a whirl because you know what? It's really not as hard as people think it is. It's very simple. The act of growing a plant begins with the germination of making the seed touch soil and take moisture and start. And that's how very basic and simple it is. So we say try it. And what's our motto, Carol?
Well, if at first you don't succeed, seed again.
Simple.
Okay, I gave you a rim shot there. So you need to have that. And your seed keeper kits, I have one because you gave me one. And they're really very organized, unlike a lot of us who are, and that's part of the deal too, is because folks, they start putting their seeds together and then they lose track of packs. Oh, yeah. and tags and everything. In fact, you know, the little when they're growing stuff, often they'll look at the cup or whatever they're growing it in, the medium, and they say, I don't remember what I planted there.
Right. And that's something else we recommend you use our seed keepers for, is keeping your plant tags in there, any plant information or articles, and write all over, save your empty seed packs and store them away, write on them, you know, if you liked them, if you didn't like them, where you'd rather plant them next year. I mean, it's your garden information station, really.
And this is really not meant to be a commercial for seed keeper company.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. I mean, we're allowed to do that. I mean, I've asked you to be on the show, so you get a little plug here. But what I'm kind of interested in is the gardening season 2015 in the Midwest. What are you looking at? What's making you excited this year?
Well, lots of things, but my favorite grow out from last year, and I only did a very small amount of it, and I'm going to go hog wild this year, is the cucamelon.
You know what? We planted some cucamelon seeds just the other day here. Explain to folks what the cucamelon is.
Well, the real name of it is Mexican sour gherkin, but it's also known as a mouse melon, a cucamelon. And what it is from the cucurbit family, it is a cucumber, but it looks like a tiny baby, like a fairy garden watermelon, and it tastes like sunshine. I mean, when you
yes,
oh, it's just wonderful. I mean, right off the vine, fabulous. I mean, none of them even made it into my kitchen last year.
Well, we just sat around and ate them.
We watched them, and we're like, "No one's ready." But it's just a delightful, fun thing to grow. I mean, you know, cucumbers are a beneficial plant for us to be eating. And you can jar them, can them up. You can eat them raw. Be fun, really skewered and stuck in a Bloody Mary on a Sunday morning.
They're
real nice.
They're just a little bit larger than a grape, right?
Right.
They're a good-sized grape. And the outer, the outside is maybe just slightly thicker than a grape, but when you bite into that, honest to God, there really is no other taste sensation other than sunshine. It just is a burst of fresh flavor.
It's like a happy pill. It is. No.
Not that we know what those are like.
Yeah, of course you don't.
But you know what I mean? It is. It just like gives you this just wonderful sensation.
Well, yeah, you got to have something in the garden that you're looking forward to growing because you think it's wonderful, and the cucamelon, I'm excited about it myself. Now, got any tips on growing? Are you raising them from seed indoors, or are you going to direct sow outside?
I think those, well, like other cucumbers, would be best direct sown. We like direct sowing things like cucumber, squash, beans, peas, cantaloupe, those types of things. Mm-hmm. Potatoes, of course.
Mm-hmm. I love potato. I've become the potato guy in my community garden, and I love growing the potatoes.
Awesome.
It's fun.
Yeah.
You know, when you're talking, edibles, vegetables, the things that are the big ones to get a jump on indoors are tomatoes and peppers. And of course, you know, that is not mutually exclusive. There are others, but the ones that we really focus on are those because they need a jump start. You know, given our, you know, we have a shorter growing season, we need to take advantage of extending it. So we start those kinds of things indoors. And we have done some practice with starting some of the things that Carol was talking about indoors. And you know what? It's just, they just do better when you direct sow cucumbers and melons and things like that. And, it, you know, why take up the space and the time to start something you don't need to inside?
I've got some broccoli and purple cauliflower started indoors now because it's a cool crop that you can put out early around now. So I'm going to hopefully get those going a little bit bigger and put them out soon.
Yeah, because as we're putting this show together, it's basically middle of April, and you guys, like me, are in the Chicago area. So in terms of the warm season crops, like the melons and the squashes and the tomatoes and the peppers, basically the idea is don't really even think about it until after Mother's Day. Usually, you know, I tell folks, tomatoes, June 1st, then put them in the ground.
We agree.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you're putting out things that are and they're just starting to grow, a lot of times I have problems with squirrels and chipmunks in particular. What we like to do is take a clear, like a water bottle or a Gatorade bottle or something of that size and take off the bottom, you know, burn off the bottom.
Right.
So it's open on both ends and just stick that over the seedling area so that you can protect them because they get nibbled on, especially cucumbers. Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that way you're protecting them until they get about 4 or 5 inches high. And their stems become a little furry and woody, and I don't think they're quite as attractive to animals then.
They don't like them anymore.
Beans in particular. That's a tip.
What do I owe you for that one? Is that one on the house?
Yep.
Yeah, that one's on the house.
No, that's you know, and there's so many different ways you can use your old liter bottles, and that's one of the ways to do it is as little greenhouses that you put into the ground. Another way is to put holes in the caps and then tip them upside down and use them to directly water to the root system of your plants. We've done that with tomatoes.
And wine bottles work great for that too. Yeah, they do.
We've heard.
And you know,
right.
Since you're on the repurposing subject, we're big, big, big on that. And we like to use, you know, any kind of container that comes in our home is now assessed for its seed starting prowess. And we love to use the rotisserie chicken holders that you find in the store, the two-piece things. The bottom's black. The top is clear.
Yeah.
It's domed. Those are the most magnificent little greenhouses ever. I mean, they are so, and it's free. It is free. Trust me, our friends now bring them to us. They go, hey, can you start seeds in this? We're like, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, we're using those too right now, as a matter of fact. Yeah, they are great. I go back and forth about this. I have a problem that we create so much plastic junk, all right, and plastic in general. Now, those things can actually be recycled, but they, as you point out, they can be reused. And one of the ways to do, and they can be reused over and over again to plant seeds.
Exactly. We call it the chicorarium.
You guys have names for everything.
Oh, of course.
It's true.
Make it yours. You know?
The chicorarium.
Yeah, and I mean, listen, those are available in so many places, and I wish grocery stores that were, you know, were ditching chickens or whatever, I wish they'd give them to people who were hungry, but secondly, I'd like them to keep those ones that they throw out and give them to people to start seeds in. Are you listening, stores?
Let's start that campaign.
I sent a note to Costco about that, and I said, you need to be making sure that those don't go in the garbage. Those are valuable.
Well, I hope they're recycling them to begin. I mean, all you do is get a little, wash a little of that grease off of there, and it's perfectly recyclable. But as you say, it's even better if it's reused.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they, I have them that I've used for like 3 or 4 years now. They're still in perfect condition. They stack. They're easy to store. They take up little space.
And those domes are also really useful for putting over those little seedlings outside and protecting them because they're nice and high. If you're starting seeds outside, that's a great way to create its own little greenhouse there.
Mm-hmm. When you direct sow, just put it right over there. And you can use like a crayon or a dry erase marker to write on the top so you know exactly what's planted beneath that little dome. It is phenomenal.
We're talking to Carol Neese and Carrie Rosenthal. They are the Seed Keeper gals, and they have names for everything. The Chicorarium. I think that the stores should start using that on labeling their chickens. We saw, I don't know why, we call them chickens sometimes, but that's to the difference between the chicken you buy, which is you have to cook yourself, and the one they've already cooked. We call the ones they've already cooked chickens. Not exactly. I know there's something behind it. I don't know what the story is behind that. And by the way, Seed, you can go to seedkeepercompany.com and get more information. Of course, as they mentioned, they're on Twitter and Facebook. In fact, you're really, really Twitter animals, aren't you? A lot of gardeners are. There's the world seems to be divided into the Facebook people and the Twitter people, but even in the gardening world, that because I know there's a lot of different groups that they have that you can be part of, and I imagine you're part of those, but do you spend most of your time focusing on Twitter?
Well, you know, we're kind of bisocial.
Do you take medicine for that?
No, you just tweet more. No, we use Twitter a lot because it's a quick and innovative, easy way. And I'm telling you, we're not just putting stuff out there. We're learning tons from gardeners on there as well. Mm-hmm. But we also use Facebook quite a bit too. Right. It means, you know, they each offer their own unique opportunity to disseminate information.
Yeah, and one thing we should do is give a plug to Garden Chat. It's hashtag Garden Chat for folks who are looking for something fun. And it happens all week. If you type in hashtag Garden Chat and go to Twitter, you'll see comments all the time. But especially on Monday night, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern, 8 to 10 p.m. Central. And then all these people get on Twitter, and if you have a lot of Twitter friends, it goes by so fast, it's a blur.
Oh, it's great. It's a garden party.
If you use that tweet deck, it's like a freaking slot machine. I'm not kidding you. Was I not supposed to say that?
Yeah, it's okay. You can get away with that one.
Okay. No, but it is wonderful to, I mean, the information that comes in and out of there, and she has great hosts who are, you know, experts in their areas.
We're talking about Bren Haas, who puts that together, and I interviewed her recently, actually while we were at the Chicago Flower and Garden Show at, as you recall, Garden Chat, which took place live at the Chicago Flower and Garden Show. Just a couple of minutes here. What else for the year? What am I missing that is very exciting and you guys think everybody should know about as we go into the growing season?
Well, you know, we'd really love for everybody just to grow something. And there are some simple things to grow. You know, if you're an apartment dweller or you don't have a garden space, you can grow even one. You could grow marigolds in your house. You could, you know, out your window.
Or herbs.
But if you could grow your own food, if you try to grow one thing, mm-hmm. We'd say like a tomato is easy because it can either go in the ground or we like to use them in our own burlap girdles, but they grow very easily.
All right, explain what what a burlap girdle is.
Well, we have three sizes. A burlap girdle is...
Do I fit into any of them?
10, yeah. What we have taken is all natural untreated burlap and a grow bag that nurseries use. It's BPA-free grow bag, and it's got like a thicker plastic to it, but it's made of biodegradable materials. It won't disintegrate on you, but it's good for the earth. Has fabulous drain holes in the bottom. And then we have a burlap sleeve that it slips right inside the burlap sleeve, and you simply fill the liner with soil and your favorite plant material. And since they're BPA-free, you can grow any kind of edible inside, and you can do whatever research you want on tomatoes. They'll tell you the best amount of soil to use is 10 gallons, and that's how big our largest burlap girdle is.
And it's simple because what you fill it, you add the sleeve, and voila, soft planter. A 10-gallon pot weighs less than a pound.
And that's something you can put on your balcony, and you don't have to store some big, heavy pot somewhere at the end of the year. You just fold it up and put it away.
And as you say, that's ideal for people who have limited space.
That's right.
And we have bigger space. You know, we're in suburbia, so we have, you know, yards. I even have a raised bed, but my tomatoes perform better in these burlap girdles because, you know, they're off the ground. The soil's warmer. Tomatoes like warm soil. Peppers like warm soil. And they have phenomenal drainage. And, you know, we're going to go to the effort of doing this. We want to be successful, right? So if you line up the things that you have to do and put them into place, you can be successful. It's so easy to start seeds. You know, we were cautious about it. We were hesitant about it when we first started, but we first started with impatient seeds. This was before the drought, the mildew.
Yeah.
Pre-downy mildew. And where did we learn about the downy mildew? Mike, from
That's
you.
That's right.
From you. Aww. The show. We wondered what was happening to our plants.
I'm always happy to talk about diseases.
Well, no, but it was beneficial because you told us, take a garbage bag to the site, put it in there. Don't drag it across your yard. But since then, little did we know that starting impatiens from seed was probably one of the more difficult seeds, but we didn't know that. And you know what? What you don't know doesn't hurt you. So we were very successful because we didn't have this preconceived idea that starting from seed is difficult. It's really not.
No.
And that's a good way to end with that advice that starting plants from seed is not difficult. The Seed Keeper gals are Carrie and Carol, sometimes Carol and Carrie. You can go to seedkeepercompany.com. You can find them on Facebook. You can find them on Twitter. We're going to have to do this again. And we'll even do the warm-ups again for you guys. How's that?
Okay.
Always a pleasure talking to you. Have a great growing season, and we'll chat soon.
Thanks. See you in the garden.
That's right. See ya.
Captain's log, stardate 42326.1. The Enterprise is under attack by an apparently hostile life form. Mr. Worf, status report.
Inexplicable, Captain. They appear to be perambulating vegetables. We are being stalked by stalks of asparagus.
That is incorrect, Mr. Worf. Killer asparagus was the subject of a very popular 21st century tome by the brilliant author Mike Novak.
Mike Novak. I'm familiar with his work, and so am I.
Mike Novak was one of the smartest, funniest people in the horticultural world of the 21st century.
Tell me more, Mr. Data.
He has been variously compared to Mark Twain, Dave Barry, and Edgar Allan Poe.
Raven Gosplach, my favorite holiday dish.
Thank you, Mr. Wolf. Mr. Data, options?
It seems to be available online at aroundtheblockpress.com.
Aroundtheblockpress.com. What do they have to say?
It appears that Mike Novak is a slapstick every gardener.
I prefer my asparagus with a side of patach kakach.
Mr. Wolf, are you joking?
Actually, Captain, I believe he is choking.
If you're thinking about having a beautiful landscape but being kind to the environment during this Earth Week 2015, you need to try Milorganite Organic Nitrogen Fertilizer. For more than 85 years, Milorganite has been practicing sustainability using natural organic material that is not based on the petroleum industry. Its slow-release, goof-proof formula provides consistent feeding, and it's safe for your children and pets. In fact, Milorganite is the nation's oldest recycler, focusing on reduction of consumption, waste, and emissions. And it works. Use Milorganite for all your lawn and garden needs. Visit Milorganite.com to find a garden center near you. I'm very pleased to have Nancy Clem back on the show today. Nancy, from her own bio on her own website, says she is a steward of the earth. Now, I will accept that, and I know she is, because it's too hard to explain really what she does. Again, from her own website, she says she's an ecological systems designer, landscaper, horticultural consultant, permaculture grower, speaker, teacher. She has spoken internationally and nationally, of course. Her latest effort is something called the Ground Rules, which she describes as a unique community and earth building initiative. Well, it's about organic waste and how we turn that waste into something really, really valuable. So I'm happy to welcome Nancy Clem. Nancy, I would say good morning, but it's not the morning. It's the afternoon. How are you doing?
Oh, well, thanks.
We're speaking to you from your place, which is where, and describe it to the folks who are listening.
Well, I live both in Chicago and on conservation property west of Rockford in the Driftless area of Illinois. It's 50 acres, focuses biodiversity, but I also do a lot of growing here, some orcharding and some annual plant food production as well. It's a pretty wooded site. There's also an old agricultural field I'm reviving and 5 acres of restored prairie and a little creek that runs through. It's pretty diverse in its habitat, and there's a lot of animals I share this land with. So it's a real far cry from living on the west side of Chicago as well. Pretty idyllic out here.
And I assume that the west side of Chicago is where you're from.
Oh, no, I'm not from the west side of Chicago. I'm originally from a rural land northwest of Chicago. Okay. I'm a rural person that's moved to the city 25 years ago.
I've been in the city pretty much most of my life, so I know what that's like. But I don't know what it's like being out in the territory where you hang out. And you've used your land and your place to draw people in. For instance, you had a mycology conference there just last fall.
Yeah. Yeah, and this year I'm hosting the Nature Farm Camp that LNMR and Tim Magner are running.
So it's right. And I talked to Tim Magner earlier this year, and I guess that's one of the reasons you're here. The other reason is you just told me about this new campaign that you're running right now to raise money for your latest effort, but the fact that you open your lands to all these great initiatives says something. And by the way, for folks who are listening and don't know what mycology is, it's basically mushrooms, right? And fungi or fungi, however you choose to pronounce it.
Yeah.
we had that argument on my show before where we were trying to figure out, is it fungi or fungi? I have always said fungi, but some people say fungi. But as we all know, Latin is a dead language. It's kind of hard to prove which way it goes.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about the Ground Rules. This is about the earth and restoring nutrients to the earth. But it's also about us and the food we eat and how we mismanage it, I guess, is one way to put it. Wouldn't you think?
Yeah, sure. I've been growing. I came from a long line of horticulturalists. I'm a fifth generation horticulturalist, and we've been looking at, anybody who's involved in horticulture is going to be looking at soil, and how it supports the life of what we're in business with. And, when I moved to the city and I started trying to work with soils in the city, I was really impressed at how ill-treated they were. And I focus a lot of my efforts when I was younger on food and medicine production in urban areas and setting up community gardens and doing a lot of production on my own in different kinds of settings. And but it all came down to soil. It was kind of our biggest barrier to growing well and also growing safely. I would say maybe 10 years ago, I started shifting my focus from plants and more on the kind of microbiology structure and general health of soil. And it was a good time because that's when a lot of younger people started getting interested in food production in cities. So I, anyway, I've been focused on it ever since. And this project I'm working on is really trying to get people to pay attention to their waste streams, organic and otherwise, as well as kind of take responsibility for them, but also just really embracing them as the true wealth and for our soils. So that's what I'm trying to monkey wrench in people's minds.
When you say monkey wrench, you know, and a couple of things you said are interesting, one of which is you said you kind of moved from plants to soil. Yeah. And there are people out there who are plant nuts. You know, they love to grow things. And yet you can't grow things unless the soil cooperates. And it's, right. And it sounds like you decided to go one step up the line, which is, you know, you still love plants and I know you grow a lot of stuff, but you realize that if the soil isn't good, nothing else is going to be good.
Yeah. I my hands are just kind of cramping and super stained right now because I've been actually working all day planting.
I should let folks know that you're sitting out there, and I can see you on the Skype here. And we had a couple of dropouts earlier. I'm not going to worry too much about it. Most of your stuff is quite understandable. But I can see the truck in the background, and I see a bale of hay. Is that what I'm seeing back there?
That's some straw.
Not hay. See, and that's my city boy bringing up. There we are. Not hay, it's straw, and I should know that. It's straw. Duh.
But, I put in several hundred strawberries, and so I have to mulch them in. So that's what I'm going to do after this call. So I'm still involved in growing, but the looking at soil is extremely important because both in urban areas and in our conventional farmlands, we've really collapsed the biological life and really destroyed the structure of our soils. And you know, where we are in the Great Lakes, we are kind of the envy of the rest of the world with our mala soils, these soils that have been produced by our original prairies. We have some of the richest and most productive soils and deepest soils there are in the world. And
yet we abuse them somehow.
And we abuse them in the city and we abuse them in the country.
You know, it's interesting you should say that because talk about the city and how disturbed soils are. A friend of mine who works for a tree care company in the area once, and he said this to me 10 years ago. He said, you talk to people and they want to know about planting in native soils and so forth. And he said, there's almost no such thing as a native soil in an urban area anymore. There's certainly no such thing as disturbed soil in an urban area. And even in suburban areas, people think that they have native soil, but that soil's been disturbed too. Pretty much every soil where most of the people live in our country has been disturbed in one way or another.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and disturbed because of agriculture or just our ever-changing real estate ideas. And we've been, you know, human beings have been doing agriculture for quite some time. So soils are in various levels of disturbance and various levels of recovery from that disturbance. But, you know, in a city, the kind of the constant disturbance, compaction and deposits of inorganic chemicals and heavy metals is kind of over the top.
That's a really good way of putting it. It's over the top. And I don't think people understand that because they want to go out in their yard and they say, what should I do? Well, I should, you know, loosen the soil and start planting. They don't know what's there. They don't know what they're dealing with. And they don't know that it's been there for 100 years or 150 years and gone through all kinds of changes. Most of it not good.
Yeah.
And so here you are with this Indiegogo thing called the ground rules.
Yeah.
And I looked at your
soil.
Yeah.
The ground rules.
And I like the name, by the way, the ground rules. Very, very good. and I saw your video and you've got people on bicycles with hauling little wagons behind them with 5 gallon buckets in them. And the idea is to collect food scraps, or is that just a start? Explain the project, the ground rules.
Well, we've been collecting already. This is our second year, so we're up and running. We have a bunch of clients, and we've been rolling and building compost. So this is our second season, and we collect by bicycle as well as truck. We collected through the winter composted through the winter. It was very challenging, but we did it. We're in a intrepid group. And basically what we're trying to do is a lot of people who are calling themselves composters or composting businesses are basically just hauling waste, and they haul waste to one of the larger commercial facilities run outside of the city where mm-hmm. it's then processed. So we're different in two ways. One, we transport the waste and keep it local. We have 5 different sites in Chicago, and they're called soil centers. And in each one of these soil centers is kind of a large composting system. And what we do is we build compost there. The aim is to make these neighborhoods scale, or if we can get to the point of producing enough compost for neighbors to take advantage of it. We don't need to use any of the compost that we produce. We probably need 2 to 5% of it for the other half of what we do with the ground rules. But it's basically we build and compost and train others in how to build compost more efficiently and more ambitiously than they probably thought about doing before. The other wing of what we do is we do community bioremediation. So we have a community bioremediation demonstration site, and it's in its second year.
And where is that?
It's in Humboldt Park.
That's what I thought. That's the one in Humboldt Park. All right. Yeah, you have like 5 areas where you're working, yeah. Right? 5 sites?
Yep. And we're looking at two more that might be in play by June. So we're still in negotiations on those. But anyway, at the other thing we do is the community bioremediation. So what we do is we try to tell the soil story of the sites we're working on. And at this demonstration site, we're working with microbes in the form of compost that we build, which is where the 2 to 5% of what we build goes to. We work with fungi or mushrooms, and we work with plants, all in a kind of a system that, because they all work together in the world anyway. So we bring them together as part of our design strategy to address the contamination or heavy metal concentration on that site. So can I
stop you for a second? What do you do when you find how do you remediate heavy metal sites? A lot of people just cap them. Are you doing remediation?
So we're doing community bioremediation, which is a long game and requires a lot of participation, but it's very low cost and accessible. And again, we're working with those tools called plants, microbes, and mushrooms.
So you actually are remediating, because as I pointed out before, and some folks listening to this might have never dealt with this, but let's say you find lead or arsenic or cadmium in your soil, and you live in an urban area. Some people say the only way to deal with that is you throw a layer of clay on it, and then you throw your compost on top of that. You're done, end of story, let's move on. Are you trying to remediate that soil that is contaminated?
Yes.
And as you said, that's a long game, isn't it?
It's a long game, but hey, it's our soil. And I think there's something, I think there's some responsibility to look at it and be curious about what we've done to it and see what we can do to help it along. Again, these are soils that most of them are disturbed. They've been imported for building projects they come from someplace else. But it is what we have, and I don't believe that we should just cap and ignore and just build on top. I think we can do some explorations of what's here. So what's interesting about these remediation projects is that we're able to work with known remediators. All of them have white papers on them, so they're scientifically proven as remediators. But we're also able to do some experimental testing of other plants and mushrooms at the same time. And I think that's really important, because this is our planet, this is our Earth, this is where we live, and why not work towards making it healthier? So the historical research we put in on our sites, and for the human use of the sites, the chemical tests that we do on the soil to find out what's there, the biological testing that we do, all of it is to tell the kind of a broader and deeper story of our neighborhoods.
Uh-huh.
So it's really interesting that each site has, a lot of the same contaminants, but the contaminants that are there tell the story of that neighborhood, because soil holds history of what we've done to it. So we're putting together a manual that should be done by the end of summer, that will talk about our remediation, and it will also showcase these particular sites and what's happening at them.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like case studies.
And this is something that could apply to anywhere in the world. Or, I mean, not in the world, it's certainly in our country. I mean, these are methods that other people can use to remediate their own soil. Is that the goal?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about a lot of different methods that are being used by, like, First Nation people who are kind of stuck with the tar sands. There's a lot of remediation, community bioremediation happening in Canada because of the extractions. Remediation's happening post hurricanes, both in New York and in Louisiana. There's a lot of work happening on small scales in cities by different groups who are working with either lead paint or, like in Detroit or in Albany, New York. I mean, so we're going to be telling stories, these case studies, and telling stories of different groups and having those resources there. And we're also going to talk about kind of more ambitious or more intermediate and advanced composting techniques.
So composting is this is not your father's composting operation, huh? It's a little different.
No, it's a little bit. Again, it's a little bit more. It's more consciously attended, and we build compost for different uses. So it's not just throw it in the pile over here. We're building different compost for different end uses.
Got
for
it.
Different goals.
Part two of our conversation with Nancy Clem and the ground rules comes up right after this.
Could an app be the answer to a better garden? Absolutely. It's the new free app, Homegrown with Bonnie Plants. Note, track, and photograph your garden's progress. Personalize your weather and reminders. Get variety info, grow guides, hands-free dictation, and more. The Homegrown with Bonnie Plants app, the sharpest tool in your garden. Download it free on the App Store.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I have exciting news to share. Natural Awakening, Chicagoland's only monthly magazine dedicated to healthy and green living, is now available throughout Cook and Lake Counties. Natural Awakening features articles about fitness, local food and drink, healthy kids and families, even healthy pets. We also cover gardening and environment, sustainable building, energy conservation, and green living. We include local news and a calendar to help you stay connected. I can guarantee that in each month's issue, you'll discover a new health tip, a tasty recipe, a new business in your neighborhood, or something that makes your life better. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good. Live simply. Laugh more.
Let's get back to our conversation with Nancy Clem and her project, The Ground Rules. This is Nancy Clem. By the way, she spells it N-A-N-C-E, pronounces it Nancy. I found that out in a show earlier that I did with you. And if you want more information about her, you can go to her website, which is spontaneousvegetation.net. If they type in something else, will it get there, or is that where they?
You know, the other thing, the other website where I do, where that actually runs the ground rules, is called socialecologies.net, and that's kind of my ecological designing website.
All right, socialecologies.net, and if you don't get it out of this listening right now, go to my website, mikenowak.net. All that information will be there, and of course, you spell my last name, N-O-W-A-K. And if you go to Indiegogo, what you're looking for is Feed Your Soil, The Ground Rules, and you can take that any way you like. There's a couple of ways to say The Ground Rules.
double entendre.
Yeah, I love it.
the cleanest way.
So the goal is get people to not throw away, and as a lot of us have learned, there's no such thing as away anymore. You can't just throw stuff. And there's a program, I forget the name of the film that's going to be shown on MSNBC. I think it Just Eat It is the name of the film, the documentary, and it's about the waste of food in our country. And this is one way to mitigate that. It's take this food and at the very least, let's create some soil out of it. Let's create compost and create biology, as you mentioned, the biology. And I often tell people it's the biology, stupid, because that's why you create compost. A lot of folks think, well, I guess I need to create soil. And my response is, no, you need to create biology. That's what compost is, the soil food web. That's what's going on in there.
Right, because soil's degraded rock, and compost is degraded organic matter.
Right.
So, yeah, minerals are coming from the soil, and biology is coming from the compost. Those are often confused.
And that's a really good way of pointing that out. Now, we only have a couple more minutes, but I'm kind of curious. Are you finding it difficult in Chicago, and it's perhaps other cities who have the same hoops of fire that you have to jump through to collect food scraps and compost them?
Well, you know, it's interesting because everybody agrees that we need waste disposal. And so they're willing to pay for that. And our waste disposal is really cheap. So when you ask them to pay for this alternative waste disposal, there can be some resistance against that. So it has been a little harder, and some of the lower hanging fruit hasn't bitten, but the people who are alongside of us are fantastic, and they're really excited that they're paired with community gardens and urban farm operations where we have our soil centers. They're really excited to have their like sister sites within cities.
Yeah.
They're excited that they're helping fuel other projects in the city. And
I think the question I had in mind was what about city regulations? Which city regulations get in the way?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of city regulations, whether it's on gray water or composting or other things that I'm a strong advocate on, they're there for a reason, and it's because people haven't necessarily done them well, and there's public health consequences to that. So I think trying to kind of relax the fears that city folks have, both citizens and policymakers have around people being able to do this well, so it doesn't attract vermin or create leachate or smell or any other nuisance, is kind of been one of the most difficult pieces to work on. So it's not so much the knowing that we need it. It's a lot of that kind of, you know, the ick factor.
That's the scientific way, actually, of putting it, the ick factor. And there is a lot of ick factor. And in fact, in Illinois, until just several years ago, food scraps were treated as toxic waste, basically.
Yeah.
And we got to get past that kind of thinking. And as you said, there's reason for it, in that the idea that we might spread pathogens of some kind is something to be taken seriously. On the other hand, we have gone so far in the other direction that we're terrified of our own food scraps.
Yeah, and we're terrified of things that break them down, whether that's mold or bacteria or grubs of some sort.
Sure. I mean, millipedes and centipedes and roly-polies and and all those things that are in a compost pile. And
right.
they're just doing their jobs, as I always tell people. They're just doing their jobs, like you're supposed to be doing your job.
Right.
So, well, anyway, what have I missed here that you want to get across before we wrap up?
Well, I just want to say I really appreciate contributions to Indiegogo, our Indiegogo campaign. We really need them to help fly this forward. And what we're doing, we've been working really hard, and we're still a little underfunded. But I'd also really invite people to join us in what we're doing. We need a lot of help. And so if people are curious about how to do bioremediation or want to learn more advanced techniques in creating some really uber compost, please contact us. And we'd love to get you out in the field and get you dirty.
And where would they compact? What's the best way to get a hold of you? Not compact, but contact you.
Through my sites, through both my websites, socialecologies.net, spontaneousvegetation.net, or through Facebook / Ground Rules.
So Ground Rules also has a Facebook page, which
is
great.
Kind of, what we're up to.
And as we said, you can go to Indiegogo, look for Feed Your Soil, the Ground Rules. Nancy Clam, always a pleasure. You are a font of information, and I've barely scratched the surface. At some point, I want to talk to you about gray water systems.
Ooh, goody.
Yeah. All right.
I love dirty water.
I'm sure you
it
do.
It also helps feed the soil microbes.
There you go. It's the biology, stupid.
Biology.
And now go pick up that straw back there and get your strawberries in, and I will talk to you soon.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
Trying to weather the housing market? Consider replacing your windows and siding. Remodeling Magazine says they're some of the nation's most popular projects today.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling and energy needs. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Anytime I have a chance to put in a good word for monarch butterflies, I'm going to take advantage of it. So I'm happy to say that the March-April issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine features an article about how to help this iconic insect. It's summed up in two words, plant milkweed. Pretty simple. But there's also a story about what folks can do to help our pollinating friends, the bees. That can't be boiled down to using one specific plant, since bees can benefit from many different kinds of flowers. But they also need water and shelter, which you'll learn when you'll pick up a copy of the magazine and read the article. But come on, most of you grab this issue because it comes with the 2015 Resource Guide, which is a handy booklet about everything horticultural in the Chicago area. Or you might grab it because of my column on the inside back page. But who's kidding whom? Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, a publication of state-by-state gardening magazines. Go to chicagolandgardening.com. But if you're in one of the other parts of the Midwest or the South, try one of the 21 magazines in those regions by going to statebystategardening.com or call 888-265-3600 for any of those magazines. 888-265-3600. You can find more information about the Mike Novak Show at mikenovak.net. That's MikeNowak.net for links, photos, and commentary.